Welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast, the most influential and listened to podcast in auto detailing. Welcome to the community.
Hi, welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast. I'm Marshall. That's Nick. You can find us at hypercleanstore.com. If you're someone that likes good car care products, quality is what you're looking for, go over to hypercleanstore.com. If you want to, you know, talk through a little bit and chat around, go to the Hyperclean Specialist Group on Facebook. That's where you got to go. Be a part of the interaction. And it's where you'll find coming out on an episode very soon with Mr. Nick, right? You're going to have an Ask Me Anything. So if people want in on that, they need to go over to the Hyperclean Specialist Group and get their question in there. All right, Nick, buy and sell. You're up.
Well, I'm going to buy as everybody gets to eat their words about how nice the weather is always here in Vegas. We had 60 to 80 mile an hour winds pretty much from Friday night all the way. Still pretty windy early this morning. If you didn't see the weather, you know, some people got real messed up in the Sierra Nevadas and traveling and all that kind of stuff. So for all the people with jokes, I kind of tell you that, you know, it gets pretty gnarly out here. So, you know, eat that, you know, hey, and you see how you'd like. We've seen people struggle, you know, with a little bit of wind to wash a car on YouTube videos. I wonder how they would have kind of handled 80 mile an hour winds. So it's one of those things, man, kind of a wild weekend, but yeah, I'm going to buy everyone that has to eat their words about how nice it is.
Well, that's me. That's me, right? I always give exactly. You crap. That's what I do. Because this weekend was 80, man. We loved it. We set out not only breakfast out on the patio, dinner and steaks again out on the patio, just loving life for the 2 days out of the 365 that we'd get to beat you. Listen, I'm all in. I'm all in on it. Do you, listen, when you do steaks, how often do you get like that perfect like char line on the grill? Do you get those diamonds and all that stuff, or what do? You just flop and go?
I go full crust, dude. I don't like the lines or amateur lines. Yeah, if you go to a steakhouse and you see lines, run away. That's more like Outback style. No, I go for crust edge to edge, and yeah, that's my move. I do have stuff that can put, you know, good lines in it, stuff like that. But yeah, no, I bailed on that when I got a little bit better at making a steak.
Yeah. Are you salt and pepper only? Do you salt it before and after or only after?
I'm salt only. Pepper tends to burn. I don't like that bitter taste. So I do salt only. And that's kind of where I leave it. I do salt before if it comes off and I'm slicing it up for people to eat, like something like a tomahawk, you know, something a little bit bigger, people are going to share. I'll give some salt at the end after I slice it up. But if you season it right from the get-go, you know, I think you're pretty good to go.
Never after though, just on the, so I'd never,
yeah, I can
done
do it after. If I slice a big slab of meat, I'll do it after too.
But just if you're going to take, so this is the part that somebody had told me like, oh no, buy this salt. And you put this salt on only after. I'm like,
oh, what is it? Maldon salt?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I
was that got hot. But my two chef buddies, who I learned a lot from in the last 10 years, that was used a lot. And now it's flake salt that everybody, you know, tends to use. It works. Yeah, I like it. But if you season it right from the get-go, I don't feel like I need like a finishing salt. But it's nice. I mean, it's a great way to go too.
Well, I did the lines, you know, I was trying to do my char lines because I was outside on the grill. So yeah. Outside, you do the flat top also, even outside.
Yeah. I mean, unless I have a bigger, like if I have the biggest cut of meat, like let's say I have like, you know, a huge tomahawk, I'll reverse sear that. Like I'll put it in the smoker, then I go right to the flat top to get the crust on it.
All right. Well, I'll stay in the rookie and I'll.
Exactly I'll right. Stay in the little leagues. Stay in the little leagues. Hey, I even grilled when it was 80 mile an hour winds. It was tough. It was tough out there.
Yeah, I'm not just outside. I'm going to go for my lines and call it a day, right?
I'm good with that.
I generally like chicken better out on the grill than I do like steak. It's just I would much rather grill some chicken.
Yeah, charcoal though is nice. I mean, charcoal's got a nice taste on a steak. I'm good. Like I have a charcoal grill as well. Like I love it, but you got to work real hard to get the crust.
We're on those tanks, right? So we're gas.
Oh, propane?
Yeah.
Yeah, here's a funny thing. You know, I ditched the propane. I got the direct into the house.
Yeah, joint, I would love to.
You know,
next
house. That's where it's at, man.
Yeah, I built the grill inside of a rock retaining wall, but then stayed with didn't.
Yeah, so you got to go to you got to put that in the back of your vehicle. Yeah, that sucks. I was there for a long time. I know.
So I'm going with my steaks, and I go look in and check out some of our videos. That's what I love doing. You know, it's a lot of fun just looking at people's comments and looking to see what's going on. So I'm buying. Listen, if the shoe fits, what do? You wear it.
Got to wear it.
And listen, if you're a dab guy, just wear the shoe, man. Just wear the shoe if you're a dab guy. Like,
hey, people it's got all real. Good. People like, went off on that, huh?
I laughed at my own stuff because there was a guy that did he did a give emoji, yeah. You know, with the dab. Yeah. And I was like, oh, wait, he was a dab guy. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Different dab. But he was like, okay, if you are, and listen, let's go back and let's remind a moment where I picked up the polisher while you were here. And what did you say after I did something? You go, oh, there you go. Because what did I do? I'm a dab guy. Like, I put it on my pad, and then I just start dabbing around. Like, that's the way I'm used to doing. So when you saw me do it, you go, oh, there you go. I'm like, I watch all these people go crazy. I'm like, yeah, you know what? If the shoe fits, wear it. You say this all the time. Like, you know, what hill are you going to die on? Like, if you dab it or you wipe it or you do the way you do it, listen, at the end of the day, you're cutting paint or polishing paint, right? Like, but to your level of being the most, what we would say, most elite, right? Or doing it all the way, go that way. But if you're a dab guy, listen, Nick, what's wrong with the dab guy, huh? Anything wrong with the dab guy?
Well, here's the funny thing. We probably say more on this podcast than anywhere you catch it online. It's all right for you to do it your way, man. We're just sharing something. You don't like it, you don't like it. If it fits you, great. If it doesn't, great. I can tell you that I've tended to wear out less tools, especially in the DA world. Marty, you're very familiar with this. DAs can break down pretty quickly compared to a rotary that you could have for 15 years and never have a problem with it. Why do I think that happens? Dab it around, spread it around on speed one, flip your speed again, you know, so now you've taken it when it wasn't moving, dabbed it around, putting pressure on the tool while it's not moving. Then you spread it around at speed one. Then you got to go back to the trigger, move the speed up. Then you got it. That's a lot going on with a tool. So for everybody that tells themselves they're price conscious, you know, then that's what you got to realize is that if you put wear and tear unnecessarily on your tool, there's a better way, more efficient way. And it's just a way that we're sharing. And it's been a lot of fun. Number one, we get way more comments like, hey, I'm just starting out. This is great to know, you know, that kind of thing. You and I just tend to find a lot more humor in that 1% that get really bent out of shape. I got called 50 years old, by the way, in one of the comments. That's just a 50-year-old mad about how people do it. It's like, I couldn't be less mad. I'm not the one wasting time. I know how to polish paint. What would I have to be mad about? I already know how to do it. So I love it, you know, and again, for all of you that are getting into the content world, you got to know if you gain some popularity, if you have something that goes quote unquote viral or a little bit viral, you're going to take some of these comments and you got to learn to laugh them off. And you and I have a lot of fun with it, to be honest.
Yeah, we do. We have a lot of fun. Listen, as Mildred gets into it, I'm waiting for him to get back on, and we can chat with all the fun stuff that he's going to see.
Yeah, you know, it's awesome.
It's a great time. For him, it's his dad, right? This is the fun part. His dad's the one leaving a bunch of comments.
Yeah, we always say, hey, your dad leaves your nice comments. Oh, your brother really liked what you did here. Yeah, man, I mean, you got to have some fun with it, and I mean it. I know it can get a little bit scary for guys out there. That's why a lot of people don't create content. They're scared of what people are going to think. Got to get over that hurdle, and hopefully us sharing this stuff and showing you how we view it and that we have a little bit of fun with it will get you to create some content and show people how you do things. Because I know, Marty, it is daunting to think about how people can speak behind a computer. Mm-hmm. So honestly, I know a lot of guys don't create content because they're worried what somebody's going to think. Instead, just take it as a fun time. And, man, people are allowed to have their opinion. It's all good with me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you're not really a whiskey drinker at all, huh? You don't have,
I mean, I can have one. I mean, why not?
Every once in a while. Yeah. It's mine. I kind of love whiskey here and there. So this is a rye whiskey. But yeah. What's significant about it, Axe and Oak Distillery, I saw it the other day at the liquor store, and I was like, what? This is here? So it's super cool. When I was recently, well, not recently, it's been years, but was in Colorado Springs working with the distributor, which this is what's fun about right now. All the different people messaging in, talking about distribution, getting ready for the season. And there's just like this excitement in the air, right? Like, I don't think it's just the change of the temperature. There's a bit of excitement, it seems, in the start of the 2024 season around distribution and getting into and how much more I can do for my customers. And, hey, I hear you guys talk about it all the time. And, wow, it's just fun seeing everybody message in. So this is a place that I had seen at when I was with the distributor years ago in Colorado Springs. They'd taken over this old school and changed it and made it into this place you can go drink and hang out. And downstairs is this awesome distillery. So listen, if anybody's in Colorado or if you get this, it's a great whiskey, Axe and Oak Distillery. I'm a big fan. Now, what whiskey drinkers will hate about me is I just cut it with Coke. I mean, it is what it is. That's just what I do, right? It is, you know.
I told you I had a crazy cool experience. We stayed at Johnny Walker's like kid home when I was in Scotland. We stayed in the Johnny Walker like estate, and you know, like where they turned where the workers used to stay into like cottages. So like my room was a place that this stuff, like all, you know, all the workers for the distillery were and stuff like that. And look, I mean, you know, Johnny Walker Blue, that's pretty good stuff. I mean, if you cut that with Coke, you might have a problem. But yeah, I mean, I find it interesting, you know, I have to get off topic here, but this is one of the interesting things about, you know, people always talk about white labeling products. And if you start to look at whiskey for real, I think something like 95% of it's made in Indiana at like a nondescript building. And you know, labeled for everybody, which whatever, man. I mean, if you like it, you like it. But that's kind of like a hidden gem of what goes on in the whiskey world.
It's not all out of Kentucky. Like I thought.
Dude, when I found this out, I had a lot of family that lives in Kentucky. I used to bust their balls. I'm like, oh yeah, is it there? You sure it's there? And you know, you'd like look at the lineage and it's like, no, it's out of that place in Indiana. But yeah, it's like some crazy number is out of this like nondescript building in Indiana.
All right, so you posted a pic inside the specialist group, and what happened? What's going on with that Bentley Spur?
Oh, man. First of all, this guy who drops off a Porsche Cayenne for us to work on, and he gets dropped off in this Bentley Flying Spur. And to me, one of the most underrated sedans ever. You'd never see them. Hardly anybody buys them. Obviously, the price tag is the number one reason, but there's a lot of people that buy luxury vehicles that would never think about this. And so I'm just like geeking out because you just don't see them that often. I'm like, hey, dude, does it have this option? Let me hop in. And he's got to think I'm losing my mind because he's like, dude, it's a Bentley Flying Spur. But then he tells me, hey, look at the passenger front window. And he's 5 minutes off the lot and takes a rock chip. A rock hits his window and it just spider webs. He's like, dude, I didn't even get it hit. We heard it. He goes, I didn't even get to my house and it already split. And that, you know, look, they have those double pane windows, you know, they have the double thickness windows. So, you know, for road noise and things like that. So then he goes and tells me, he goes, you know, here's the problem. It's $8,000 to replace and it's going to take forever for them to get it. He goes, so I'm just driving around with this ugly window. Now, he makes kind of a weird comment. He's like, you know, this happened because I didn't have tint on my window. I said, well, I don't think you know how tint works, but let me walk you through that so we don't have any misunderstanding. Tint would not have solved this. But with that double thickness window, one of the things that happens is you really only see it from the outside, right? Because it's on that first layer of window. And so he sees it like walking into his house and it bothers him. But really when you sit in the driver's seat, and I looked at a couple different angles, it's really hard to see. You know, you'd have to really be looking like pinpoint exactly where the cracks were and stuff like that. So I don't remember. I just tried to make him feel good about himself saying, hey, I've seen this before. I told you after that, I'm not sure I've ever seen it on that level, you know, for that type of damage. I've seen stuff thrown at somebody's window and broke, but driving down, getting that kind of rock chip, and man, it just destroyed it. It was wild to see.
So never see them much, huh? Yeah, I don't see those. All right, so here's some other ones we don't see much, and I got this out of MSN had an article, and this is what I thought.
Wow, they're still around?
Yeah, right? I know. So biggest flops, speaking of not around anymore, you don't see them. Biggest car flops. Has Lamborghini had one? Do you know of the Lamborghini having a flop? The Lamborghini Cheetah.
Oh, well, I was going to say their SUV didn't do that great either, the original.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be one. The one that comes to my mind is the Lincoln Blackwood. Do you remember that? When Lincoln made that truck and everybody was like, oh, Lincoln's made a truck. And you're like, what is going on? Then you saw it. You're like, oh, this thing is heinous. Yeah, that was a flop. Yeah. Share some more.
The DeLorean. Wish we could have. Everybody DeLorean. Wanted one, right? Yeah. Everybody wanted one, but that metal was just right. Nobody could do it.
Yeah.
Well, heavy, now you have all that stuff.
Hey, now you have the Tesla Cybertruck, which evidently is already rusting. Which is
already rusting. Yeah, that's what's interesting. Seeing people open the doors and seeing all the rust, and that's like, oh,
yeah. Okay.
Cooking with Nick, man. What are we doing over there? Y'all got to change this. So, what do you think from Cadillac? There was the Cadillac Elante in '86.
Yeah. And by the way, I always loved the Elante. Way underrated. Look really good in person, but they never took off.
No, and neither did the Catera, which was also another interesting one. But that one was a snapping timing belt, so you know it is what it is. I guess
the Cadillac Cimarron back in the day. They had a lot of things that didn't go real well. And I recently heard something interesting about Cadillac, is that it took Cadillac a really long time to realize they were Cadillac. I thought that was kind of an interesting point of view on Cadillac.
There were still too much general government.
Yeah, too much GM. Yeah.
We were both Suzuki owners. Do you remember the Suzuki X90?
Man, that is really a blast from the past. But I do remember something from Suzuki we've shared on here before. When you bought a Samurai, you used to have to watch a safety video of why it flipped over in the dealership. That's an odd.
Really? I didn't know that. Dude, mine was used.
Yeah, oh God, dude. If people ever see that video, it's wild. They put these like big stilts on the side of the car, on the side of the Jeep, so you could see how it rolls over and doesn't. Yeah. Suzuki had a couple.
So yeah, Suzuki. And then what about the Honda logo? Apparently only 9 months and then they got pulled. 9 months because it was too boring and too practical. Like they thought they'd go super practical. And they're like, no, we don't sell any. You remember that SC430? That one, I can't believe got pulled. Yeah. That one's from Lexus, right? With the folding roof. That was super cool. But I mean, the problem there was those back seats were just too small.
All-time ones was the Vector. What was it? The Vector W8. You know, Vector now, you're seeing the price kind of go wild on these, but not like wild, like Ferrari territory, but you're seeing people trying to get Vectors now. And you have a lot of these things in history that, I mean, you remember the Pontiac Aztec. I mean, that was one of the all-time flops.
There was the next one. When it came out, I remember going, okay, there was a lot of people hating it, but I kind of was like, I could see that. I could see
Now you look at how SUVs look, and it was way too futuristic. But, if it got rid of the plastic cladding, which was big for because like Chevy Avalanche and all that kind of stuff at the time had that cladding. But if you can find a Chevy or Pontiac Aztec with the tent, there was a tent that went to the back. Because remember, that back was kind of, you know, big and bulbous. There's an actual tent that comes with it. If you can find it, those Aztecs go for reasonable money if they have all those accessories. There was like a cooler, a tent. I mean, it was like a whole show, but you just never saw that.
Walter White must have taken them all. That's why. So one that was too early, right? That was the Aztec was one. Another one that we don't think about that was so early, but we don't think of it because it made way for the next revolution, and that is the Tesla Roadster.
Oh, yeah, dude. That and supposedly, they're supposed to there's supposed to be a 2.0 to this whole thing, but I think that was supposed to be out 4 years ago. In true Elon fashion, it's like, hey, we're going to have a new Roadster 10 years ago. But yeah, the Tesla Roadster is awesome. If you've never seen one of those in person, never been in one, it's just like the Fisker, the original, the Fisker Karma. That was an awesome car to see in person. It just kind of never took off. It never got big.
All right. Awesome car to see in person, but you don't see anymore on the road for Wesley and all of our Nissan people. Listen, I always thought it was pretty cool the way they did this. It was like, all right, yeah, take the Murano, make it a convertible. Like, yeah, people are going to buy
that. Yeah, the convertible Murano. Hey, that is an all-time joke when you see in person. You're like, who the hell was clamoring for a convertible Murano? Yeah, dude. This is a game you could honestly do for hours. It's like, who was clamoring for these vehicles? And by the way, how'd this get up so many chains of executive decision making? They were like, you know what people are really clamoring for is a convertible Murano.
And it uniquely had its moment, right? We used to see them when they were hot for a month.
Yep. Literally, it was a month. It was like 1 month. And it was probably like April of that year. And then by May, people were like, why did I get a convertible Murano?
Marshall Mathers, I'm a big fan. I always have been a big fan of it. It might be the name, not sure. But even after paying him to promote something for so long and do such a hard time at it, do you remember what he was a part of that ended up being a big flop? The Chrysler 200.
Oh, yeah, that was a stupid idea. With a 300 having so much success, why they built the 200? But, you know, Chrysler went real down into the convertible with the Sebring. Now, I know you saw those in the Midwest. I know you. That was like 52-year-old.
They sold a ton of those.
A bunch of us. 52-year-old retiree, you know, went to the cheap country club, not the expensive one, right? I mean, that's just what it was. I mean, they went deep into that convertible world. Deep.
All right, so next flop. Is the next flop? Listen, we just mentioned Honda. I think they've gone all in, right? They pushed the chips to the table. They're pretty excited about hydrogen. I don't know,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, Toyota for sure. I mean, Toyota's
too. Yeah.
Yeah. So is that Toyota? The Japanese automakers have been, and you know, we've talked about it on this podcast for about a year, especially some episodes I did that aired on Saturdays. If you guys want to go listen. There was a lot of lying to people, lying in the auto industry about electric vehicles and the adoption of electric vehicles. Look, Ford has already backed off the Ford Lightning. Everybody's canceling electric vehicles. They're pausing programs. You saw Apple is now dumped their program. They dumped billions of dollars into. Is hydrogen the future? It's all the same thing. It's where's the infrastructure going to come from? You know, you're in a place where CNG took off. You know, natural gas engines were a real possibility. And even where you guys had an abundance of that, and you did have people investing into infrastructure, largely never took off. You know, we see CNG vehicles for like public transportation out here. But, you know, again, it's an infrastructure conversation. This is what nobody's talked about. Where's the infrastructure going to come from? And unless the government incentivizes it or penalizes like Volkswagen and their diesel, diesel scandal by doing Electrify America, even though they got penalized and Electrify America got off the ground, Volkswagen didn't want to do it. It was just a penalty for their diesel penalty. And you see that it's kind of one of these things. It's all about the infrastructure. And people cannot overstate the gasoline infrastructure around the world. It's massive.
All right, so you say infrastructure, and I think a lot of people are just, they'll be topical being like, yeah, it makes sense. But to put it into real perspective, just start looking around at how many gas stations are in your area versus alternative fuels, right? Like, that is infrastructure to its core. And as somebody, you're right, somebody who built a large chunk of my business off of CNG, because earlier, you know, as we were starting, we did go CNG because it was 80 cents. I was paying 80 cents while other, and before even that, we were below 50 to 40 cents sometimes, while others were at $4 to $5. And this was 2011, 12 through there. But you're right. As CNG began to, and it rose its rate, and it got a little bit closer to gas, and as gas came down, hey, you start to weigh the cost to con of, you know, I could save some money, but I'm having to go drive over here. I'm having to map out something. Whereas when I just drive them down the road and I go, you don't go grab a coolie. You don't go grab a beer out of the coolie. You don't grab anything. You don't get one of those hot dogs that has all the crazy stuff. You don't get anything when you're at a CNG place, man, like nothing. So being able to just go into the gas station, grab a little snack, you know, fill up the tank and away I go. We think infrastructure, but we also go, man, it's just convenience is the infrastructure, right?
Like, dude, look at Buc-ee's. I mean, look at Buc-ee's. If you've never been there, it's like a shopping mall.
It's massive.
And it's an infrastructure, right? Yeah, they sell gas, but like you said, people go in there, buy a sandwich, they buy some sweets, they buy a t-shirt, they do whatever. There's an infrastructure that people have paid for and built businesses around. You know, you just can't wipe that away. And even in my part of Vegas, which is heavily growing, you know, it's hard to put your hands on 30 chargers for an electric vehicle, and they've been building them. Like, they've been actively building. Tesla's been actively building massively in my area, and it takes them forever to get 20 of these things up. You know, no fault of their own. You know, we're seeing this whole thing about the battery plant needing a coal plant to fire it to build the battery, and it's like they're going to have to build a coal plant just for the battery factory. It's like, dude, the infrastructure is not anywhere near where everybody thought. And you look around and you go, you have executives making $20, $30 million a year that didn't know the infrastructure was going to be a problem. It's just like when everybody had a different charger that went on their car. Now they're all going to the Tesla-based charger, you know, charger that goes in. What took you so long? Have you never seen an electrical plug? If everybody had a different electrical plug everywhere you travel, like when you go to Europe, you got to buy one of those like 4 or 5, you know, different plugs because of where you might be. I look at it and I just go, how did nobody say this out loud? I'm not the smartest guy in the room, I can promise you that. And I knew the infrastructure was going to be a problem. And largely, you had a lot of automotive journalists, you had a lot of automotive podcasts. They were all in the tank that electric was the next thing. And by the way, it still may be. I'm just saying it's not today. You know, hydrogen may be the next thing. Is it going to be today? Well, how many hydrogen places are you going to put in Tulsa? Because you got 500 places to fill up with gas. So you got to figure that part out. You can't just say, well, we'll just put this in downtown Tulsa. You'd be like, well, I live in the east part of Tulsa. I'm not going to drive down there to put some hydrogen in my car. I mean, I won't even go to a Costco to save on gas. I mean, I'm just not doing it.
I love if I get forced, in a sense, and it is forced, like somebody in the passenger seat going, hey, I was like, okay, fine, I'll go to Sam's, no worries. I ain't sitting in that line. I'm going to go around the backwards way and like come in and back in where nobody comes to that other side.
100%.
But for me, I loved when I finally saw Sam's finally start to put some Snickers bars or some, you know, some chips outside, like something for somebody to walk over and grab. Like, that is an ultimate thing that is still tied in that everybody loves to go grab a snack, fill up the car, and away we go. You know, speaking of away we go, the other day I was trying to leave HQ. We've had these. I love election years. Love election years. Why? I love the energy. I love all the back and forth. I love the talk. I love watching the debates. Like, I don't vote, but I love to watch, right? Because it's fun. It's fun. And people get so butthurt and they get so, you know, like praising this one dude, right? Like, so I love it. Well, so we're leaving the other day and this guy, I see pull up and I'm like, huh, what's he doing? I roll down the window. Hey man, you need something? He goes, well, I'm here for you. I go, yeah, we're just leaving. He goes, oh, well, I'm da 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 da, and just starts in this pitch. Wants me to make sure I'm aware of the things that's going to be on our ballot.
Are you prepared for Jehovah's return?
Well, no, it wasn't just Jehovah. It was also, you know, like the government ballot, right? Like, what
It was a joke. When somebody knocks on your door.
I'm sure there's somebody somewhere that it matters for. I go, but I don't vote. I don't think my opinion really matters. Oh, well, but this is really important stuff for you. Okay, man, thanks. And it was almost like those phone calls. You get them, right? Actually now I've done where I pick them up, and if it's a couple second pause, I'll just hang up immediately. If you don't say anything, it doesn't trigger. But there's a lot of times I don't pick up. I don't recognize that number. I've been so enamored by all the calls and all the people beating me over the head. Like, I just don't pick up calls anymore. And what does that mean? It means I miss some calls though too.
Yeah. You miss business opportunity. Look, I'm on my iPhone, you know, if anybody, we get asked all the time, my iPhone has a business line attached to it and my personal line attached to it. And it pops up if it's a business call or a personal call. If it says business, I largely pick up. But one of the things I've started doing is if it's a spam call of some sort, is I just block the number. I just block the number. And largely that's cut out a lot of headache for me. As you continue to do that, it builds a Rolodex of people that can't continue to contact. Because what I found on my phone, I don't know how everybody else's, maybe you guys have the same, like the same 10 people would call me, spam me for some reason for a very long time, you know, 10 days, 20 days, 30 days, a couple months in a row, whatever it is. And I think you only have one choice.
We pick out like this small city that it says it's coming from, right? Like some no-name city in the panhandle of Oklahoma. And you're like, I'm out.
Yeah, exactly. And I get it, man. I mean, the phone can become a real frustrating thing because if it's just so hard to weed things out, right? So for all you guys beginning your career, and I know a lot of you don't pick up numbers you don't know, to be honest with you, I don't know that that's the route I'd go. I'd pick up every call and I would just start blocking numbers. And yeah, man, you're going to have some things happen. You're going to have some time wasted. You're going to have some headache, but can you afford it? You know, I never let a phone call go early on because I wanted business, right? I needed business to keep growing and I needed to get to a certain level. So I think that's part of the issue is a lot of guys are saying, hey, I'm just not going to deal with the spam. But you don't honestly know what's spam and what's not. You know, I get it. It may pop up that it's spam, but sometimes it's not.
There's a lot of times that, you know, you or I will be returning a phone call, right? And people don't answer. All good, right? They're busy doing something. But I know there's people because I didn't recognize your number. Listen, I thought there was one the other day and it came from like this AXA Lead or something was the name that came up, right? So they've even gotten gifted with trying to look like there's somebody. And it turns out it was Verizon Business. And I go, listen, man, I'm not interested. And I hang up, right? Calls me back 3 more times. So then I do take your advice right then. And I go block the number. I love that advice. You'd given it to me recently. And so that's what I've started doing. It does take a little bit of work at first, but I'm excited and we'll keep an eye on it. I'm excited to see over the next months how much it dwindles down. So I stop missing important phone calls, but stop getting just bombarded by everybody. Yeah. There's more and more, especially that's why I joked about like, you know, 2024's electric, like it's going to get really big even more when people want your vote and all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. It gets pretty ugly this time, right? You'll have about the next 6-8 months. It'll be pretty heavy.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. I know you and I will have fun jokes about it. So a fun joke that it is, well, let's say that again. Not a fun joke. It's a moment, right? It can be a fun joke about, oh man, employees, right? Like, oh, it doesn't matter. We talk to plenty of people and some are doing well. The ones that we hear, and I talked to one last week, they're like, yeah, I fired everybody. Huh? Like,
yeah.
And that's not the only. We've heard this from multiple people. When you're trying to grow 1, 2, 3 team members and then going through and clearing house from everything, we got to start over. It's like, I've been there. You know, I've gotten screwed over by people. Maybe that's what it was. Not sure. Didn't ask. It's people that always think. But how do you handle that moment for just a second? Like, you got team member that ain't doing right or a couple that aren't doing. Have you ever cleared house? Or if you're in that point, what do you do?
Yeah, I never cleaned house of like firing 2, 3, 4 people at a time. I definitely got to that point where I felt like I should. Right. I felt like, hey, these 4 people are the wrong people. These 3 people are the wrong people. But, you know, I was booking work based on having those bodies there. And so, you know, kind of the story you and I hear a lot is I cleaned house and then I missed out on work and I pissed off customers and I put myself behind the 8 ball and I have this problem. So, you know, team members are a frustrating thing for a lot of business people, not just detailers. Okay. I know people that own chains of fast food. It's a problem for them. You and I talk to enough business owners, man, the employee thing comes up. Doesn't matter what business you're in. The people business is a problem, right? For a lot of us. If you get to the point where you feel like I want a clean house and you clean house, I'm not sure how you come back from that because you're not really accepting what it is to have team members. There's going to be a level of frustration. There's going to be growing pains. There's going to be, you know, things you wish didn't happen. If you can't keep things on the track and you feel like I'm going to clear out 4 bodies at a time here, that's hard to recover from because now you've alienated customers and you've told yourself it's okay to do this, right? And that to me is a real tough spot to come back from. And again, everybody can make a mistake. I made 1,000 of them hiring team members. And I've said that 1,000,000 times on here, but I always try to tell people and try to make people understand that you can't let things get so bad in your head that you make a crazy call on a Wednesday and put yourself in jeopardy.
So how does somebody let it go that far that it gets in their head so bad that they have to snap and clear out? I think that's when I've thought of and talked to people. I generally just in my mind, I just go, how did it get that bad? You had to clear everybody out. Like, well, there should have been something earlier on. Is that where we need to have the right procedures? Is that the, where you got to have those? You get, you know, what's that way? If somebody messes or does something, you got to create this like, write them up and all that stuff. So, you know, what is that? What's a write up? How do you handle write ups?
Largely right now in my company, we're pretty verbal with employees, obviously, with some state regulations, federal regulations. You need to write people up, you know, to show that there's a rightful termination and you don't get into some unemployment issues and different things like that. You don't want a lawsuit or anything along those lines. So you have to, when you hire people, the biggest mistake I made is I wasn't level-headed about hiring people. I was really elevated. Like I went into hiring people, I'd pay them this money and I'd go, well, I'm paying you to do this. And once you're kind of in that elevated state of mind, it's real hard to come back from. I made that mistake for years, 2, 3 years, where you have to understand, man, you're hiring somebody. They're your responsibility. You have to teach them. You have to reprimand properly, which is really what we're talking about here. When things get out of whack, you got to pull them to the side. You got to spend an hour. Here's why I'm reprimanding you. Here's what you're being written up for. You got to go through these procedures. But at 22, 25 years old, would I have done that? Hell no. I was an idiot, right? But I'm telling you, it only harms you. And so largely, I struggled to hire, and I think I see the same thing on the other side, is people don't have the right mindset about hiring and what it really entails, what it really is, what you can actually get out of somebody. I get it, man. You know, we went from $10 an hour world to now you're probably looking at starting people at $20 an hour. Okay, and that's a lot of money.
That happened
fast. It is a lot of money. And it happened fast. I mean, for a lot of people, this happened within the last 4 years. It didn't happen over a 10-year period. It happened largely over probably a 2-year period, if we want to be more accurate, right? So the other thing is I put a lot of pressure on myself because I wasn't in a financial position to really hire the way I should be. We say this all the time. You pressurize the situation when you're not in a financial place to hire someone, meaning you have 3 months of their salary saved up and not 2 weeks of it. because think about the stress that comes with this person better pay for themselves right now. You know, Marty better pay for himself today. It's like, dude, that's not going to,
Hell no, ain't happening with me.
I mean, we're 3 years in. I'm not sure that me and Marty are paying for ourselves. So at the end of the day, that stuff's not going to happen, right? And that's where frustration grows. And people got to understand that. Like, 90 days isn't that long. And I would say for most services that people are trying to offer, it's going to take longer than 90 days for most people to get up to speed. And if you feel like that's not going to happen or you're not in a position to do that, you might not be in a position to hire. Now, I don't want to say that for everybody. I don't know everybody's situation, but if you can't look back and say, I can give this person a 90-day run and not miss the money, it is what it is. We'll see if it works out. You're going in with an elevated mindset. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of us that think of, listen, I'd just be happy if somebody showed up somewhat on time, and then stayed showing up for months and months at a time, right? Like,
sure.
I think that's a lot of us. Like, we're just happy to have that, right? So you
that's certainly where you're at now. You weren't like that when you were first an owner. So remember, you learned that, just like I learned that, right?
All right, explain that. What do you mean?
You say that now because you have a realistic expectation of somebody who works for you and what it's like to hire. When you first hired, you just took for granted people were going to show up. And then when they didn't show up, you just got elevated mad. And then when they didn't show up, then they showed up and didn't do a good job. Now you're double elevated. Now you're mad and pissed. And you're talking as somebody that's probably been hiring for well over how many years now? I mean, I've been hiring for 13 years. Right. I mean, essentially, I've been hiring for 13 years. We've been hiring at Hyperclean since I've been there. We've been hiring. And really quickly, you go from I'm looking for an A-level player to I just want somebody to show up consistently. That you develop that knowledge.
There you go. I see what you mean. Yeah. Because the early people thinking back as mobile, the early people I brought on, I just didn't know if they were going to be around, right? They come for a little bit, but want to go do something else, right? It wasn't for them, right? And this is what detailers all want to find somebody that loves to clean cars. That is very hard to find. It is very, very hard to find. And so you're right. It took a little bit of time, but then I was just like, okay, you need what? You need this amount, and you're going to be here this time. And finding the people that actually do want to show up, whether or not, listen, as you've said, we said, everybody, we're not sure if people really love to do their job. It's not about loving to do their job and finding their purpose in their job. It's about getting paid. And it's about, hey, are you going to be here? You're going to do the work, and then you're going to get paid, right? Like, but the question comes for so many people as they progress through, right? And you've got somebody, they've been on the team for a little bit, like, But now we've moved on from just showing up. You know, that's a D or C player if we want to think of grade levels, which is you brought out years and years ago, right? So remind us about the D to C level player. And, you know, because a lot of us want to think that, hey, I bring somebody in and great, they're at least showing up happy, but how do I get them to do more? I really need a star player here.
Yeah, look. You know, I learned the hard way through my mistakes of trying to take somebody who was a C-level player and make them an A+. How do I grow them into that A+? Well, largely people that are A-level players, they come out of the womb A-level players, right? They're born A-level players. Now, you can develop some people into an A-level player, but here's the whole theory that I learned from my million mistakes. You can only bump somebody up one grade level. So if somebody's a D-level player, you can make them a C, C+, but you're not going to make them a B or an A-level player 99.9% of the time, because that's not who they are, right? Because everybody is somewhere around where they're supposed to be. If somebody's an average team member, they're supposed to be an average team member. But what I can do through my processes and my procedures and the way that I do things is I can take a C-level player and I can make them a B- to a B+. But I'm not going to make them an A. So that's just not going to happen.
You do that by what? Moving them from wheels and tires to glass? I mean, what is it that makes somebody go up a level?
Yeah, so, I mean, look, an average person who's a C-level, D-plus level or above, if your procedures are good enough, you're going to get good results on cars if you have the right procedures. But here's the problem. If you think you're just going to cut somebody loose and kind of show them what they're supposed to do, and then it's going to be all good, which I think is what happens the majority of the time. I've been guilty of it. You've been guilty of that. Hey, I'm just going to show you once and you should catch on. Well, that's an A-level player. And I got news for you. Most of them aren't cleaning wheels. That's just not what's happening, right? They may start there, but they're going to be there like a week and they're already moved up in their company to something else, right? I mean, you've seen that happen in your career. And so one of the things that everybody, and myself included, I had to realize is where somebody is and how they are is how they are. You're not going to fundamentally change a human being, right? It's just like you were talking politics. For all the people that argue on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram about politics, you're not changing anybody's mind. That's why you and I have a laugh about politics. You're not changing someone's mind. That's not happening, okay? That's not happening because people are who they are, and that's okay. But how do I take the average, which is most people in society as an employee, as a team member, from a C, C minus, C plus, and make them perform like a B? If I do those things, I'm going to have success in my business. Now, if I hire Cs and I keep them as Cs, I'm going to have a problem. So it is your job to learn to elevate people that one step above what they were. And if they get really good and they really attach on to your processes and your procedures, I got news for you. You can find a lot of success. And so if you look at any company in the world, what's Chick-fil-A do? They hire young people. They put them into a system. They say, you're going to do it this way and you have a good experience at Chick-fil-A. That's all they do. They don't hire a bunch of A-level players. That doesn't exist. They take a bunch of C-level players and they make them in their procedures, they make them perform like a B. And that's what every big company in the world's doing, right? That's one of the reasons it was really hard for me to work for companies is because of all the busy work. But the busy work comes because they're trying to get somebody who's average to perform a little bit above average. And that's all you're really going to get to do. And you got to be happy with that. And that is the tough spot for me. I really struggled with that.
Okay? And I think a tough spot is what you just said. Like, you got to get them to do it. You can have all the procedures you want, but I think that is one thing. Is, I don't know, there's a lot of detailers that, let's go ahead and take this word out there. Let's go ahead and throw it out there. Leadership. To move from detailer, being a detailer, being skill set. My skill set, my rotary, my fill in the blank, whatever. Yep. I use this. I love the people that, you know, leave the comments. Hey, you should go try this, you know, this tool. This is a better tool, right?
Yeah, you cut with a DA. I can cut way faster with the rotary. Yeah, dude, it's a DA video. I got it. Yeah, that guy was cracking me up.
So, you know, can somebody, well, yeah, they can. Can they take them from a D to a C? Can. It is, right? But will, right? Is that going to happen? Is it determined based solely on the person? Or how much do we do as leaders inside of our own businesses? And there becomes that moment where we got to look really deep in our own business. Even this is why everybody's like, oh, yeah, this is the time I go work on my business, not in my business. But who really gets to the level of learning leadership and learning how to talk to people and learning how to write the procedures so that somebody doesn't fail? Like, putting in all that effort as a leader actually probably is the problem. Not can you take somebody from a D to a C, is, hey, are you a good enough leader to do it?
Yeah, I think leadership is a real red flag word these days, to be honest, because you have a lot of natural born leaders writing books on leadership, and it comes natural to them to lead groups of people. And that's tough for those that aren't naturally born that way, right? Because that's a small percentage. And the rest of us have had to learn how to be somebody that's good to be around. Understanding was a real tough thing for me because I'd already been detailing 12 years by the time I started to hire. So I always felt like, I can't believe you don't know this. I mean, we have these conversations behind the scenes. We're always really amazed at how many people don't know the basics of detailing. We take it for granted, you and I. We've had to admit that out loud to ourselves, like, hey, maybe we just take this for granted. And one of the reasons we started making content, because we realized how much we take for granted that this has just been part of our life for so long, right? We just kind of have an institutional knowledge that we take for granted. Leadership's a tough thing, man, because the stats tell us, not my opinion or your opinion, is that 9 out of 10 people shouldn't start a business. That's tough to hear, and that's tough to accept. And we've watched people either grow into awesome leaders and build companies, and then we've watched the other ones where they always lose team members, they always struggle to keep people. And you and I always come back to something that's the core foundation of leadership. Are you a good person to hang around with? Right? Are you good to your people? You know, meaning, are you organized? Do you show people how to do things? Do you understand that they're not going to get it on the 10th time? Because they may not. And they may not be doing that on purpose. And man, I found that real difficult. I really did.
So as you started working through it, where did you stick to your guns, right? This is where I think some people get into it, like, well, I wrote these processes, you're going to do it. And if you don't do it, well, you're getting rid up and one more write up and you're gone. Versus
my way or the highway doesn't work.
Yeah. Where
doesn't work.
Where does a leader do understanding and not getting rolled over on there, right? Because you can be too understanding and you have so many opportunities that now you're in trouble because they've messed up too much, you know?
Yeah, no, I think I've fallen into that a lot. You know, I've probably given people, especially as I've gotten bigger as a company, I've given people too much leeway. You know, I tend to give people more leeway now because of the financial situation of the business, and I want to be understanding. But the my way or the highway thing doesn't even work in the military. That it just doesn't work. You know, Navy SEALs don't operate that way. You know, if you think they do, you can go talk to a bunch of Navy SEALs. It's not like their commander comes down and says, you're going to go do this. And they just like run out and do it. So this doesn't work. I found the easiest way to communicate, especially if somebody continues to make mistakes or miss things, is I always go to them and say this really out front. Hey, man, you're making this a little bit more difficult on yourself. I don't want to see you have to work harder than this already is. Let me walk you through why we do things the way we do. And look, if you have a better way, or you think there's something that we're missing, my door's always open. My phone's always on. I'm more than willing to hear that out. I was not that way 10 years ago. I can tell you that right now. I was the my way or the highway guy, and all it did was get me in deep shit. It didn't help me. Didn't solve anything for me. And it comes back to, man, I can usually tell when somebody tells me to have problems hiring, and I spend about 10 minutes on the phone, and you've been on these phone calls. We can get off the phone call usually now and go, would you want to work for that guy? Like, you all have buddies that tell you about they struggle to hire, and you go and you tell your girlfriend or your wife or your boyfriend or whoever, and you go, I wouldn't work for that dude. And he's my friend. I wouldn't work for him. Like, it sounds like it'd be miserable. So I think the fundamental part of leadership that nobody ever said out loud to me is, do people want to be around you? Because when I was going through a lot of people, man, I was under a lot of stress. I wouldn't have wanted to be around me. So I didn't have a leadership problem. I had this dude's not fun to be around. Right?
So the opposite side of me is I was probably a little too much fun to be around. And I wasn't strict enough when people didn't follow. And listen, that's why I mentioned that about procedures earlier. And I hope every single person that owns a shop or does something has procedures written down. I wasn't a procedures guy, let alone sit down and write them out for too much. They were, now at the car wash, you have to, right? And that was just with some bullet points and a couple sentences and stuff like that. I imagine that most, when you're thinking of processes, is it probably more than just a couple sentences and some bullet points, and it's almost like a chapter out of a book? Or how in depth do you go? Because I think I probably was on the opposite side with, you know, I'm a little too lenient, and then people would just, you know, go off and do something else. I don't know. I always struggled with this part of it. Like, how much do I go into the guy, into the team member, because he didn't follow through? But I might have not had my processes fully written out, you know, to where it was dummy proof in a sense.
Yeah, and that's what you're doing. You're dummy proofing your business, right? That's what you're. That's how you make things easier on your team. Remember, largely most people end up quitting because they're frustrated because they don't think they understand what they're supposed to be doing, right? I mean, we've been guilty of that. We're all guilty of that. You know, you wish you'd have done things differently or told this person. I never 100% blame. And I think that's the first part of leadership. You can't blame everyone else. If you've run through a lot of team members and you're convinced you do everything right, it's hard for you to grow. You know, you run through a lot of team members, man, you've done something, right? And you just got to accept that and go, hey, man, this falls on me. And I don't think a lot of people want to do that because it's uncomfortable as hell, to be fair about it. It's not the most pleasant thing to do. But you also have to look at it realistically, that if I'm really trying to get to the next level, I'm going to have to fix a lot of things in my business. It doesn't matter how old your business is. You know, you look at Walmart, they're constantly fixing problems. They've been around a long time. All they do all day as executives is fix problems and redo things and revisit things. And the same goes for HyperClean. The same goes for VR. The same goes for every business. That there's too many people wrapped up in the way they do things being the end-all be-all. Well, if that's the case, then most people that have a business that's older than 10 years should never use a DA polisher because all your processes 10 plus years ago were on a rotary. And there's many of you listening to be like, well, that'd be crazy. A DA is so much easier for people. Exactly. So my opinion had to change because the world changed. And so the same thing goes for leading your business is that, you know, all these cliches of working on your business instead of in your business, and that cliche shit sounds great. It makes you feel good about yourself. That's fine. But a lot of it is you got to fix the stuff that you've put into place that you have this deep opinion on that isn't helping your business. Right. And you and I talk about this quite a lot. Just because you have an opinion doesn't make you right. There's a lot of people that have opinions on how this business works, and it doesn't work anything like they're telling people it works, whether that's a family member or publicly making content or, you know, we see this a lot in the chemical world. Everybody's convinced they know how the chemical business works. It's like, no, you don't. And now you have an opinion that you're entrenched in, and all it's doing is penalizing you. So the same goes for your business on a small level. If this guy comes to you and goes, hey, man, I think we could clean wheels faster if we did it this way. And you're like, do it my way. What if he was right? Now you're entrenched in your opinion over what? This guy might give you. And by the way, all my guys that give me opinions and we take them, they're happier. And if we get to the same end result, I'm good with it. Hey, you guys like doing it better this way? Great. Let's do it better. Let's do it. It makes sense. You guys thought it out.
So, not an easy answer. I don't want the easy answer. I mean, how do you know if you're paying somebody too much or not enough? Right? Easy answer would be too much. Well, I'm paying too much. End of the month, I just don't have enough money. Right? I get it. But not enough, I think, is where so many of us struggle with it.
99%. You know,
what that $2 more, $5 for some of us, $10 an hour more for some of us. Boy, I got people, you know, I'm paying them. I can't believe, right? Like, I can't believe it. You know, it doesn't make sense. Well, you know what? You throw a couple more dollars per hour on there. You know, it's going to keep them around. But yeah,
paying people's hard, man.
We struggle, hard. Don't we?
It's hard. I would say very rarely in my life has somebody brought me in to discuss their business and I've said, you're paying people too much. I don't think you've had that experience, maybe a couple times in your life. You know, we've had some situations at HyperClean and looking back, did we pay people too much? Maybe, but not really. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you're not saying, you know, that guy left and we just paid him too much money. It's like, no, you just kind of accept it and you move on, right? You go, hey, we made a deal and that's what we'd say we'd pay him. We didn't get our worth out of it, but we were good with paying it. We paid it for the right reasons. you're not struggling very often because you're paying your team very much. You know, you're paying your team too much. I think it's always almost the exact opposite when someone's struggling, because some people have found a great balance, right? There's a lot of successful businesses out there that have paid people really well and they figured it out. And so I don't want to say it's all doom and gloom. It isn't. I've kept guys for a very long time. They make a really good living. I do what I think is fair. And if it's not fair and they came to me and tell me why it's not fair, I'm going to listen to them. I think the thing of it is that the more open-minded you are that you're not right about everything, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah.
Because I've been on the other side. I thought I knew everything. And that's why we hammer that home so hard on here, because I can't explain to you when I read stuff in Facebook groups or we get emails or somebody texts me or somebody calls me within 2 seconds, man, I can tell that you're a know-it-all. Because I've been there. Marty, you've been there. Those first couple years you start a business, and I don't care what human being you are, you're convinced. You got that righteous, I'm right. You know, I got the new thing that's going to take off in the world. We're all built that way. And I can always tell, and I really hate that I've witnessed this in my life. I've watched friends who've started businesses not in detailing. You and I have talked to really talented people in this business that should have had millions of dollars in success. And they only had one problem. They were egomaniacs. They knew everything. They didn't have 50 problems to solve. Honestly, did they? They knew how to detail. They knew how to do it on a high level. They could probably teach people. They could definitely grow their business. But their whole world was wrapped up in they knew everything. You got to detail it my way. My way is special. You know, that's what makes our company special, is how I detail a car. I never say those words. I don't believe that. I believe a lot of you listening are great detailers. You probably do an awesome job. I don't get all wrapped up in I'm the best detailer to ever live. Just don't care that about that. I care that my customers like what we're doing and that my team members are taken care of and that the business is growing. This idea that I went through it, you've gone through it. My way or the highway comes from you know everything and nothing else. And that's just a recipe that it's game over, man. You're not going to succeed. And you and I know there's a person in your brain right now, the same one as me. And I go, it's a shame to watch what happened to him and his business and the lack of growth. Because you know what, man? He had all the makings of, like a lot of people, he should have had a massive business. But he was convinced it was his way. You're going to do it. Just because you own a business, man, doesn't mean it's your way. Business is business.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. And we do have the right to do it ours because it is ours. But having an open mind, listening to what you have to say should be what we do. I think there's a lot of us that are going to really look at the way we interact with our team members, how we view leadership. Leadership also goes into the way we take care of our cars, right? Making sure I do things the right way. The other day, we'll close on this. There was a guy, you know, here locally that's just right across the street saw the Jeep. And he's like, man, I'm sure everybody wants to get their car clean because how clean your Jeep looks. You should put a sign on it. Like,
well, if there's a hyper clean sign, you definitely are fired. You're definitely paid too much. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I agree. Like, I mean,
sounds good there, buddy, but realistically, that ain't going to happen. But what we had to say here, you really want to grow. These are practical, real things. And I do appreciate that when people come back and respond to us and say, hey, man, you guys really do stick to what is right, what is true, what is pure and driven for a long period of time. So great discussion, man. Great discussion on leadership and team members.
All right, guys. We'll see you guys next week.